This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to part two of my conversation here on this guest episode series on the Authentic Persuasion Show. I have with me again, Mr. Lamar Johnson from the University of Texas at Austin. If you didn't catch it, make sure to check out part one. We talked about authenticity and what that, where that fits into sales now and where it's always been a part of sales. But just so you know, getting you caught up, Lamar is a longtime veteran at Procter & Gamble, leaving school and ending up getting into a sales role and then making a long career out of it at P&G, returning to his alma mater at University of Texas, Austin, and being a founding member of the Professional Sales and Business Development minor at UT Austin. He's dealing with corporate relationships for the program, also teaching the future of sales and helping them on a different path and, you know, a path that's beneficial for them, for other companies as well. And this episode, we're going to talk about the persuasion piece. Lamar, are you ready for the second part?
Let's go, man.
All right. So jumping right in, one of the things that I like to talk about in this segment is about persuasion, which to me is the process. It's the intentional act and way to move the right people forward into, you know, being a customer, being a client when it's a good fit. I think it's fascinating. You mentioned in part one, which I want to revisit a little bit, which was the training that you had at P&G for sales, which at the time was very much go out there, knock on doors, it sounds like, of some retailers and talk to them about getting your product. Did you have more product training like a lot of companies will lean on? Did you have sales training? Was it a mix of both? What did that look like when you first started?
It was sales training, quite frankly. We knew the products, but the customer wasn't using the products. Our customers were Kroger and Walmart and HEB and Safeway and people like that. They didn't physically use the Downy and the Tide and the Bounty paper towels. Their customers used those. So there was some education of the product, or quite a bit of education on the product, when we had something new, but which, you know, happened every few months. We'd have a new item or a line extension, and we had a lot of training on that product and how it benefited the consumer. So they felt mm-hmm. good about putting it on their shelves because it was a product that was going to sell, because we were going to market behind it and because it met a consumer need, et cetera. But the sales training was all about persuasion. It was about how to build relationships, how to get the attention, how to solve problems for the retailer, understanding what the retailer's business was. We had a lot of training on how does a retailer make money? How do they operate? What would appeal to a retailer from a sales presentation? What kind of things would turn them on that would make them listen to you? And so that was a lot of really understanding the business that we were in. And then it was up to you to understand the specific customer. Where were they in the marketplace? Who did they compete with? What kind of retailer were they? Were they a mass merchandising retailer that also carried P&G products? Or were they a full-line grocery store? Or were they a convenience store that had limited shelf space? So you had to understand the customer that you were calling on naturally. But P&G had a very defined sales process. And it was called the 5 steps to persuasive selling. Guess what? But it was how to organize your thoughts in a way that were logical and led to a conclusion that your product fit the needs of the customer. And ideally, you get to it. And the last step of the 5 steps was to close. Guess what? You know, you have to ask for the order. But, you know, very, very generally, it was, and you stick with me, it stuck with me for a long time. And by the way, P&G had this very famous one-page memorandum philosophy. And that is, if your idea didn't fit on one page, then it wasn't worth submitting. And you could have attachments to that page, but you had to be able to summarize your plan. This went all the way to the CEO. I mean, any business, any rollout, any capital improvement plan, any whatever it was, all the initial stuff had to fit on one plan, on one piece of paper. And it followed the same steps as persuasive selling. So you started out with the summary of the situation or the background. Here's the big picture. And then you stated the idea right up front. Our idea is to blank whatever that idea is. And then you explained how that idea worked. And then you reinforced the benefits to the customer. And then you closed. Very simple. Mm-hmm. And that you could, there were some other things you mentioned in there, but I still write business memos today on that same, or recommendations in that same format. What's the situation? What idea am I trying to get across? How does that idea work? What are those key benefits again to doing it? And then say, what's the, you know, I suggest this for the next step. And it's a powerful way to communicate. But you had to know when to deviate from that plan and when to stick with that plan. And, you know, early in your career, when I was 22 years old coming out of school, I didn't have enough judgment sometimes to, I didn't know what to do if the buyer got me off of track.
and interesting.
So I had to figure that out. I mean, it was like I had my, you know, five steps to the persuasive sale, and there was 10 steps to the call. You had to go in first and introduce yourself in the store, so they knew a rep was at the store, and then you went to the shelf. And there were 10 steps, all these 10 steps. I'm getting all this stuff now, you know, but it's beneficial to learn the process in a defined way. And then as you get experience, you learn how to deviate from that process at the right moment when it's the right time. You know, as an example, rudimentary example, but suddenly you go in and you summarize the situation, you state the idea, and the guy says, okay, I'll buy. You know, when does it ship? And you know, wait a minute, I haven't explained how it works, and I haven't explained the benefits yet. I'm supposed to go through the process.
Which is hilarious, and I'm laughing with you because I've seen so many new reps struggle from that same thing. They have a process, they have a system, they have what the company has trained them on, they have their script, whatever, and someone says, okay, sounds good, you know, what's next? How do I sign up? How do I buy? And they're like, oh, okay, well, the next step is I got to give you this demo. It's like, no. I've worked with so many teams where I'm like, demos are not a requirement. It's not. You can sell without a demo. People sold things forever without slide decks and demos and presentations.
Listening and recognizing the buying signals are way more important than following the process. And that takes a little skill and some experience. So we had an example of that, though, just recently, if I can kind of deviate, but that drives us home. So we're new in this whole thing. So last fall, we were still in we just started our second year. We're still kind of organizing this sales club, and we're not yet involved in case competitions with other universities. We're still getting our act together. And I had a call from a company that was going to sponsor two students who were going to be senior or were seniors to come to their headquarters and participate in a nationwide sales competition. All expenses paid. So no risk here. Why not? So I found two people that I thought would show well and had, were in the minor program. And prepared them, and they only had about a week's notice to do this. And they said, "Sure, send us up." And there were 48 students there, two from UT, and there were four from another school that I won't mention. But these two kids got up there, and they said they were concerned because these other schools were all off practicing their process. You know, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we haven't really gotten to that in our minor program about what the process is supposed to be. So we'll have to ad lib it. So I'm one of these kids, and this is beneficial of having kids in this program that aren't just business students. This kid was a kinesiology major. I'm not even sure I pronounced that right, but he was looking at sports management opportunities and gotten into minor professional sales. And he was a very smart young guy. And anyway, so he goes to this competition, and he ends up winning the national competition against all these other universities that have been preparing the students with the process. And I said, so why do you think it was that you won this? And he said, I saw all these other kids. They were so practiced on their process that they couldn't get away from the process. And said, I just started listening to the buyer. Or the sales executive that was pretending to be the buyer. And I started talking about my idea, and he was asking questions, and I could see that he was going in a different place than I thought he would go initially. So I went with him. And it's like, I went around the end and met him on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and he was there, and he ended up buying my idea. And he said, everybody else got all hung up in trying to follow the process, and the buyer got them off track, and they didn't know how to get back on track. So, smart people can figure out how to listen and how to adapt in order to eventually persuade.
So because again, that happens so much, and that leads to another question that we could talk about with the competitions. I know that you haven't officially started that part with the UT yet, but what are you doing with future salespeople in that persuasion mode to help them have that process, but then also deviate? Because there's so many people that do the same thing we're talking about, where they sell, they have this process, and they don't care what the other person says because they're going to do it the way that they think they should be doing it, right? Yeah. Not even highly scripted, just here's my process, take it or leave it.
Yeah. So I work with sales club people. We have faculty that do the instruction and the curriculum. And quite frankly, just to back up a little bit, our program is open to any student in the university, regardless of their major or college. But it's headquartered in the School of Business under the Department of Marketing. But it's in collaboration with our College of Communication. And so all the classes are taught either in the business school, where they get a heavy dose of marketing courses, negotiation skills, from a procurement standpoint, but negotiation skills, how to think about that, some business skills, analytic skills, et cetera, come from the business school. And the communication school teaches presentation skills, teaches sales skills like that, et cetera. So that's where they get those skills from the communication school. The sales club brings all that together. And so that's where I bring the company representatives in. And whenever they come in, they've got to not just talk about their company, which I give them a chance to do, but they have to talk about something we want them to talk about. And it could be making cold calls. How does the company effectively make cold calls? How do they think about training and their initial sales reps, and what do people do when they're first on the job? So a lot of that practical stuff that comes in through the selling club, and the experts in communication skills and sales skills in the School of Communication are teaching them that, and the business skills and the analytic skills we're teaching them in the business school. So that's kind of how it all is wrapped together. So I'm trying to bring it all together with real world stuff in that sales club.
Where are you seeing these sales students and the people in the sales club struggle with the persuasion versus manipulation part? I know previously we talked about the authenticity and bringing who you are. And then there's this part, right, which is the actual act of selling. And where are you seeing them struggle with that, embrace it, like the example you shared?
Well, if they've gotten far enough to be in the minor and in the sales club, they've already embraced it. They're trying to figure out how to do it better, and because that's what interested them into getting in the minor in the first place, was the ethics surround the new perception and the new reality that sales is all about positive ethics and solving problems in a productive way. And sometimes to solve problems for somebody, you have to persuade them that you really do have the solution and they need to listen to that, you know? And so that's part of the process. You can't just say, I've got a solution to your problem. Here it is on the desk. You figure it out. You know, you've got to be able to help them understand why your idea fits their needs and will help their business. And so they're all over that. And they understand that persuasion is a key part of selling, but it's in order. It comes from a place where you're authentic and you absolutely believe that your product and your service or your services will help them build their business or solve a problem. And if you have that conviction, then persuasion is the way you convince the other people that you're right, that you've got the right idea for them. And they're all over that. They think that's terrific. Now, I would say if I went out, there are 48,000 undergraduates at UT. We have now, with the ones we're just accepting, we have 180 students in a minor. So there's a lot of people out there that wouldn't understand that. So that they don't understand, they probably still think persuasion is probably convincing somebody to do something they don't want to do. And that's certainly not my definition of persuasion.
Yeah, On a side note on this, what do you see as the future plans of just getting that out to more and more of, specifically just in your family of the UT students, right? The 100 and so versus the 48,000, and just raising awareness. Not that they're all going to be sales students, but just raising awareness and shifting even their mindset around sales.
Well, that's the purpose of the webinar I attended yesterday with probably 50 or 60 people that are professors and or directors of programs at their universities. It's all about how to create more awareness of sales and how to change that perception. And a bunch of different universities have different ways of doing it. Most have been doing it a lot longer than UT Austin has. So I was there primarily to pick brains and see what they do. But they use students who are in the program to go to other colleges and business groups and fraternities, sororities, et cetera, and talk about the minor or their program. Sometimes it's a certificate, and there's a couple of schools that have a major, but they send students out who've been in the program. They work with them on their elevator pitch, and the student goes out and does the persuading. And I think that's powerful. That's something we do, but we haven't done it to the extent that these other schools are doing it. And it's certainly something that I took away from yesterday as an action step to go get some student volunteers to learn the pitch and to sprinkle themselves out across campus. And there's no way to cover all 48,000 students. You just can't. And quite frankly, we don't have teaching capacity for more than we have now. And so one of the things we said is we're taking about 40 students per semester, and it's an application process. They have to apply to get in. They have to have a 3.0 GPA, and they have to write answers to 3 essay questions on why they wanted into professional sales. And by the way, you'd be really excited to read some of them, because most of them talk about they've heard that it's a way to solve problems, and it's a way to, some of them say it's a way to make a lot of money, but they also say it's a way to engage in business and solve problems. And, they're the ones that have gravitated toward this thing. So that's about it. If we get all of a sudden, and by limiting it to about 40, if we have 1,000 applications, we're still going to take 40 because we don't have teaching capacity yet for more than that. So we've got to attract attention, but in a relatively limited way. Interestingly, we've got, I don't know, 6 or 7 colleges across the school involved in the program. The School of Business is one of the smaller percentages of students. We only have 15% of our total from the School of Business. Communication College has half of them. The rest are education, liberal arts. We've got some engineers in there. Kinesiology, I mentioned, is part of the School of Education. So we've got some people that want to go into sports management. But the School of Business is still working on finance and accounting and marketing and consulting roles. So we've got an opportunity to increase our percentage of students who are in the business school. The business school is hosting the program, but we've got a fairly small percentage of business students in it.
Yeah, and it's really just, I just see it as those efforts, what you're talking about, raising awareness to point out that everything in life is sales, and B, what they think of sales is a minority group of people who are selling in a way that most people don't actually enjoy or want to deal with anyway. And that's not real, let's say real sales, professional sales. And I think even just helping them understand that, like, hey, this is, what sales is. So when you get out in the real world, even if you're in accounting, everything is sales. And by the way, sales doesn't mean, plaid jackets and pushy tactics.
Exactly. Right? And we talk about, in fact, if you go to our website, which is the McCombs Professional Sales and Business Development website. We've got a little 3-minute video on there that we actually filmed before we started this program. And it's alums that are doing sales jobs that give a little vignette about what it's like and what they learned and why it's an exciting career for them. And one young lady talks about, even if you're trying to get your kids to eat oatmeal, you need sales. You need sales skills. And it's kind of this, you're selling no matter what you're in, whether you're trying to sell your boss on an idea or you're trying to sell the board of directors on moving forward with a capital proposal or whatever it is you're selling. And what a better way, there's not a better way to do it. Even if you don't plan on a career in professional sales and business development, getting an education in it and learning more about it will help you in whatever you go do. It's a no-brainer. So
completely agree. On this persuasion topic, last question from the flip side, which is more about the buyers. Why do you think people don't buy, or what gets in their way of moving forward when we're talking about this, you know, persuasion approach, but from the buyer side?
I think it's maybe a couple of things. One is that they don't, you haven't built the trust yet and the ability to provide an idea that gets the buyer's attention. They haven't yet seen what is in it for them. And even if they like you, they may be hesitant if you haven't made the case for what's in it for them for that product. So they have to see how they and their company are going to benefit, or they may be hesitant. They'll reject you right away if they don't know you and don't like you. But if they like you and they know you, they'll at least listen to you, even if they're skeptical. And then it's a matter, if they hesitate, it's a matter of asking the right questions to get them to give you the information that will help you adjust your approach so that they see what you see in the product and see how it's going to help them. Another one might be that they, you know, you've got a competing company, and there's been a proposal made from that competing company. Both of you have good proposals, and there may be a hesitancy, you know, to buy your idea because they're still evaluating the other idea. They just don't want to tell you that. But that's back again to asking the right questions. If you detect that hesitancy, so that you can find out what's really bothering them about it. And you may not be able to solve the problem. Once they tell you what's really bothering them, you may not have the answer. And that's when you can go back and say, got it, you know, not right for you. I'll be back, you know, in a month with a different idea on something different. But you have a chance to discover what's bothering them and overcome that if you ask a question. You also have a chance to build an even deeper relationship if you walk away from the deal and say, you're right, this one that doesn't fit you as well as I thought it did, or as well as the competition does. So it can be a win-win if the buyer is reluctant to buy.
Yeah, and I really like the first part, which also leads into the second part, which is about the trust. A lot of times the trust isn't there. You haven't built the trust, or they don't trust you as somebody who's going to give them the right guidance that will ultimately leave them in a better place, right? Like you said, what's in it for them? They've got to trust that if I say you should do this or you should do that, or here's what makes the most sense, that it's actually for you and that I'm here to help you, not just I have a quota or I have, you know, some exactly. things I have to get done.
Yeah. At the end of the day, great sales, long-term sales are based on trust, and that trust is based on authenticity, where they know that you have their best interest at heart. You have their personal interest at heart. You know something about their family. You're involved with them somehow. And if they see you as that authentic person, they really believe you're there to help their business, that leads to trust, and that leads them to accepting your idea.
I love it. I think that's a great place to end. Some really good things. I've been taking notes because there's so many things that you covered in this, from the five steps to persuasive selling back in the P&G days, wrapping it all the way around to trust and persuasion and, you know, long-term relationship building and long-term solution providing. I love all that. Lamar, thank you for being here on part two for talking about persuasion.
Thanks, Jason. It's always fun.
And for people tuning in and watching, these links will be in the show notes, but you can connect with Lamar on LinkedIn. And then also there's the University of Texas McCombs School of Business, and that site will be in there as well. But he mentioned earlier, I know that you can Google that and find that professional selling program. As always, thank you for tuning in, for being a part of this journey, especially the persuasion piece. We're helping you become a trusted advisor and help people buy for the right reasons and selling for that right reasons. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.